All right, everyone, welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 73. I know because I checked.
Yeah. Round two.
In this episode, we sit around and wait for Mr. Benedict Cumberbatch to show up and talk about the latest offering from Marvel and Doctor Strange. And before we all do that, we want you guys to go over to lots of the social media sites, but especially to the iTunes, where I imagine many of you have subscribed to this already, and we thank you for doing so. But we would really appreciate it if you would go out there and rate us. Give us, we would accept anything from a 3 on up, but if you have it in you to give us a 5, we'd really appreciate it.
It's like 2 more little stars over. It's really not a big deal.
It costs you literally nothing, so we would really appreciate that.
Some arthritis down the road.
And as always, we are at the number 3 Drinks In Pod, at 3 Drinks In Pod on Twitter. 3 Drinks In Podcast on Instagram, and of course the same thing on Facebook, because there's nothing at on Facebook, it's just whatever. So yeah, catch us on all those things, and we're going to be putting out a poll in the next couple of days. Let us know what you thought of Doctor Strange, and I guess that's everything.
Yeah.
Hit it, boys. I'm going to go, record the podcast with Phil. I'll see you guys later. And they go, oh, is he coming?
That's cute.
I was like, no, we're going to do it remotely. And apparently it sounds so good.
Nice.
That nobody had any idea. So
that's good.
Yeah.
I remember when I moved to Virginia for that short time, and you were like, you sort of like raised your hands like, the fuck? What are we going to do? And I was like, dude, there's a plan. Don't worry. We will get this done.
It's called the internet.
Yeah. If babies can't stop us, then nothing can.
Seriously. So what are you enjoying today?
I'm drinking down a delicious spot in Oktoberfest.
As am I. Because we're actually in the same studio today. There we are.
Nice. Yeah, these are so good.
I will say it does have a different flavor than on tap. And I happen to like the on tap better, but still, it's the most solid of the Oktoberfest beers.
Yeah,
of which there are many.
You know what you're gonna get.
There's no surprises here.
Yeah, no, I like them a lot, and it's not pumpkin. It's just it's just Oktoberfest, like fall type beer.
Yeah,
some of them are like they were really pushing the pumpkin for so long.
I think we oversaturated ourselves on pumpkin.
Now they're trying to like sneak them in, like it's Oktoberfest and pumpkin, and you're like, oh god, what did you do? I don't want that.
It's Pumptoberfest.
Yeah, but like in August.
Yeah, they start that so early. It's like, I'm not really in the mood yet, guys.
The spring comes around December, and then...
Still working through this summer ale I bought.
Yeah. It's true. Like, I still have a lot of Corona from, I don't know, June? It's too much.
Yeah. So this is the first time we've actually... seen the movie and then went to record the podcast right away.
Yeah.
And we were...
Usually we wait a day or two.
Yeah, we figured we'd try to catch Mr. Cumberbatch right in the middle of his press junket.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that's at the tail end because the movie opened yesterday.
Yeah, but they still sort of do it, right?
Yeah, he should be, so we I expect him any moment.
Yeah, really, like the doors, we just left it unlocked.
Yeah, just big sign, please come in.
Yeah. We have an Oktoberfest for you. Yeah, just grab one on the way down here.
So
we're down in the podcast lab.
So we're going to wait, I guess.
Okay.
Did you like the movie?
I did like this movie. I thought it was good.
I didn't know anything about Doctor Strange before this movie. Were you conversant in Doctor Strange before
this? A little bit. Not a lot.
Okay. Did it appear in any cartoons? Because most of my exposure to Marvel stuff is really through all the TV cartoons they did.
I mean, he always had like cameos.
Yeah.
Like his whole thing is that he works best when he's kind of like in the background. Mm-hmm. Like when he's the focus of he's been in since like the 60s. He's been around. And you have to just sort of be into magic. This was back when Marvel was covering its bases and they had space people. If you liked aliens, they had people on Earth. If you liked mutants, and then they had magic people like Merlin and shit like that. So
they had Merlin?
They got Thor. you know?
Yeah, Thor's still kind of big ripping, you know.
Yeah, Thor's a bit more exciting than Merlin would be. But yeah, I think Merlin's made appearances and a few other people. So the premise of Doctor Strange is very good. And, you know, much like Professor X, I'm a surgeon, I can't use my hands, but I have magic powers. So that was always kind of like an interesting concept.
Yeah.
So
no, I didn't know a thing about him.
Yeah.
And we both kind of went like, oh, really? Magic? Well, you're going to do...
Yeah.
It's sort of a hard sell. Everything is so grounded now. You know, the explanations for everything and, you know, like, I remember...
Stupid us. We did watch 2 Thor movies, so yeah. Like, I don't know why we thought this would be a problem.
More importantly, we paid to watch 2 Thor movies.
Yeah.
But I remember in the, I guess it was for the first Thor movie, There was a great trailer that featured I can't think of that, Clark Gregg as Phil Coulson, the agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, like he's like the ultimate sort of just the facts, ma'am, kind of actor at this point. He's total, you know, he's really really talented, but that's like his sort of bread and butter right now, is playing this kind of come in there straight talk, no bullshit, just. And there was this great scene where he was interrogating Thor in a room. Mm-hmm. And that's always kind of fun. Like, I enjoy those scenes where it's just like this little tiny white guy next to this tremendous Australian who's trying to, you know, get information out of him. And that, scenes like that really help to ground the movie, and like, because he thinks he's a terrorist. So that they do with guys they think are terrorists, and they interrogate them and they try to get information out of them. And that word's been a boon for like these franchises, James Bond. You know, instead of making it about world domination or, you know, weirdo, nefarious aliens with, you know, conquest plots, it's really, you know, the word terrorist gets thrown in there a lot because it's a real-time scary thing that people can identify with. But with Doctor Strange, I was like, oh, it's straight-up magic. They call it that. There isn't even like a... With Thor, it's like, well, it looks like magic to you because we're so advanced.
There was a little bit of that. Just enough in this movie.
Yeah.
Thor had a bit more of it because it was the first one.
And it took place in a totally different realm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you don't know a lot about Marvel, you can be like, oh, okay, cool. There's more than what I'm seeing. And if you know anything about comics, you're like, yeah, that's right. The Subatomic Universe or whatever. Like, they talk about that in Ant-Man.
Right.
You know, like, that's a thing. It's a place he goes where he knows people and stuff. So, you know, if you're going to have a set of movies for audiences of all ages, then you have to sort of do it slowly and let them adjust. And the benefit of doing a movie every couple of years like they do with Marvel is that the audience adjusts. They change their expectations.
Yeah, sort of you're orienting them into a whole universe of things, which is both good and bad, as we've discussed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're talking about today, but the guys who do the Red Letter Media reviews... they did a one about The Force Awakens, and they went into this whole tirade about the Star Wars franchise and the Marvel franchises, and it kind of struck me. It's like watching a TV show over your whole lifetime,
yeah,
in 2-hour bursts that come out every 6 months, and that sounds exciting. Everyone's like, "Oh, that's great! More of the thing I love," but it's also like it's the same thing, though, in a sense. Fatigue will set in at some point.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, and we kept saying, like, when will it happen? Well, it...
Gotta happen.
Right? Eventually.
I mean, if it can happen to the NFL, it can probably happen to Disney and Marvel.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing. So, anyway, before he gets here, we should talk about Benedict Cumberbatch.
Okay.
It's just because, I guess we haven't any negative things that we want to get at before he shows up. His accent was terrible. Was that just me?
No, it wasn't great.
Yeah.
It, you know, depending on what he was saying.
Yeah, like the times where it was clearly like, wow, you're barely holding on to it now.
Yeah. What?
He was in and out of it a lot.
Who's in The Hobbit? Who's
Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman. He's also in the Marvel movies. He was in Civil War. He played like an agent.
Yeah.
And his accent was even worse.
It was terrible.
I was like, why don't you just let him be British?
Yeah.
You know, like Doctor Strange is not. I get that.
He can't be British? I was thinking, like,
I mean, I guess he could be.
His voice is so iconic. No, I shouldn't say iconic. It's so identifiable.
Yeah.
You know, like there was this whole thing about him like reading the lines to some pop song on a British TV show. It, like, it, little video that went viral, and it was hysterical because it was this deep and sexy kind of, like, you know, very, very British, posh kind of accent. Mm-hmm. But so he has to be American. He can't be.
Yeah, well, that's kind of his thing. It's just that he's not from the Far East, where there's a lot of whitewashing in this film, and the idea was that he was from the best of the Western world. He was the smartest doctor, you know, and he goes to Tibet and learns all this stuff from very not poor but primitive type individuals who look and you know, they're monks basically.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of white people in this, which was fine, whatever. But now he's American, and he's standing next to Tilda Swinton. So
is she? No, her character is not.
No, in white. The comics, she's an old Asian man, and they made her white.
That's an odd choice. I mean, I
feel like they can't win, like, because people complained. But if they'd had an old Asian man stereotype, do you not think people would have complained?
As I was saying that, I was like, you know what? Actually, it's more interesting that it's a bald white lady.
Right. Look, we made a choice here. The same thing happened with Iron Man 3, where the Mandarin, who was basically Fu Manchu the man,
yeah,
you know, they were like, well, let's just make him Ben Kingsley, because if we make him Fu Manchu, people will bitch and moan.
Yeah.
And then people complained it was Ben Kingsley. So, yeah, can't win everybody.
No, well.
They went with a stylistic choice, and in this film, they picked bald, you know, Swinton.
I think my favorite recent irrational freakout was somebody had posted I think it was like the New York Times. They have like a whole food section now, kind of like the Food Network has like a website you can go to for recipes. And so they posted a recipe for pho, which is Vietnamese soup broth with quinoa in it. And it was, you know, I made this, you know, healthy, you know, quinoa pho the other day, and it's really good, and you should try it. I know it's not traditional, but blah, blah, blah.
You know what really grinds my gears?
Blew up Twitter for like an hour and a half. Because that's cultural appropriation.
Oh, yeah?
Because pho is traditionally served with noodles, not quinoa. You racist bastards.
Sons of bitches.
And I'm thinking to myself, how much time do you have in your day? I don't have that kind of time.
It's just noodles, man.
I mean,
it must be really hard to be angry at everything all the time. I would be so tired.
It's exhausting.
You know, people who are angry at us right now for talking about this.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like, can't you focus that energy on something better?
I can't imagine that you have nothing better to do.
Take a painting class. I don't know. It could be a Jackson Pollock painting. Yeah. Angry painting. That's
Go
fine.
Wild with it, you know? If Bob Dylan taught us anything, it's that things would have to make sense.
Well, that whole thing.
Right.
Everyone I was standing like, oh, he deserves it. No, he doesn't.
Well, side note, he doesn't think he deserves it, which is why he never bothered to call them back. They had to hunt him down and complain about it publicly before they went, all right, I'll show up to Sweden.
Oh, my God.
You guys are paying for the airplane, right? as crazy as Bob Dylan fans are, Bob Dylan, I don't think, believes any of his own press. He's pretty sort of like, listen, I just, this, like, yeah, fine. Yeah. You like it? I'm really happy about
that.
Yeah,
seems like a...
Which is sort of nice.
Chill guy.
Because everyone's so nuts about him that if he believed all of his own bullshit, that he would just become insufferable.
Like the Rolling Stones.
But there was a great article in, I think it was the Weekly Standard by Andrew Ferguson, who's like, he was the first guy to write a song where it was okay, that nothing made any sense. Just read the lyrics. It's all gibberish.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter.
We read him in college.
Because together with the music, it was kind of fun.
Yeah, that's one thing. But if you put up, like, if you take him as poems and put him next to, like, Toni Morrison, it's not
Honest
even the same.
God, yeah.
Anyway, Benedict Cumberbatch, I thought was besides his accent though.
Accent, it was very distracting. But he's so good, isn't
he?
I mean,
I thought he was great.
Everything now, he looks the part too, which is really nice.
He looks just like him in the comics. He looks perfect.
Apparently, they when they were filming, I guess they filmed it in New York. Part of it, he went to a comic book shop in costume.
Oh yeah,
and people took pictures of it. I'm like, that's balls right there to go to, like, you know, it's like walking into the lion's den at that point.
Costumes look good too.
Yeah, I kind of thought, you know, I mean, yeah, it was not much to them. It was
they weren't
simple.
Over the top.
Yeah, I mean, the cape was, but
The cape was.
We'll get to the cape later.
He needs the cape though. It's very important to his character.
It's his thing. Well, the cape. While we're here, the cape I thought was great because the cape is essentially his sidekick.
Yeah, it's got a mind of its own.
Is that the thing in the books too?
Yeah, depending on which comic you're reading, it can either bend to his will or it controls itself.
That's been a reoccurring thing in this, because like that's with Tony Stark and the robot arm in the first Iron Man.
Or even just the computer he talks to, like in the helmet.
Right.
You know, it's like it has its own personality where it's snarky. You're like, what?
It becomes like a buddy picture, which is what made the first Iron Man work so well, was that he had someone to play off of, but it allowed him to be as much of himself as possible. It was still like, you know, the Tony Stark show.
Yeah. It gives them a chance to not just speak to themselves.
Yeah.
You know, like, so if they're thinking something and it's not, we're not watching Breaking Bad or The Wire here, and we're not getting the emotions through acting, have him say something out loud to the fucking cape, you know. It gives him something to bounce exposition and jokes off of.
Yeah.
You know, in the Avengers, there's five of them or whatever. When it's him in the cape, well, at least he can talk to the cape.
Yeah, these solo projects, I mean, like Captain America had a lot of interaction with people because the character had to internally develop a lot, and he was part of a team. He was in the army, but these guys are very much loners, and so it's a really neat device. I thought it worked really well here too.
It looked good. I mean, it was animated well.
Yeah,
Benedict Cumberbatch was good.
He's one of those actors. It's just he's so British.
Yeah, he's so
in a lot of ways.
So is Martin Freeman. So British.
Yeah, and they're also trained that way. Like you. British act, and I mentioned this before, like people who were trained in Britain to act are trained very differently than most Americans. You know, here it's all method acting. It's all like Dustin Hoffman and trying to get inside the character and becoming another person. And they're very, very much playing a part. And so it's sort of like you're kind of aware of what's going on, and they're kind of not winking at the audience, but they're saying, we all know this is not real, right? And that allows them to be a little bit more over the top. Which what I think makes him good is Strange.
Right. Well, yeah, because he's in an over-the-top kind of universe, like his little corner of the Marvel Universe with the magic and having out-of-body experiences and things like that. Like, you sort of have to look at the camera and wink a little every so often. Like,
yeah,
I was just in the broom closet of my hospital. Now I'm on Everest, and now I'm in Tibet or Nepal, or, you know, let's all take this with a grain of salt sort of thing.
And the nice thing about this movie is that they do draw attention to it.
Yeah.
In a very obvious kind of... And they made fun of it, which was the only way you could deal with it, is just to go, what the hell?
Because other people saw it at certain points.
Yeah.
You know?
Like the one of the best fight scenes I thought in the whole movie was when he's fighting with the guy and like when their spirits are fighting with each other.
I thought that was great.
That was fantastic.
I was like, wow, this is so well done.
Because they're having this whole knockdown, drag-out fight in the ether.
Yeah.
And at the same time, they're sort of interacting with the stuff around them.
Yeah. Like if he punches him so hard near the vending machine, like all the candy gets jostled around.
Yeah.
But they don't actually like knock the candy machine over.
Yeah, no, they don't interact entirely. It's just enough, you know, when the energy level of the fight increases,
right,
that they can, you know, interfere with things in the real world. How clever is that? I mean, clever, I think, is the word of the day.
Yeah.
For this, everything about this movie was extremely clever. It wasn't totally unique or brilliant or whatever, but like it was a lot of things presented in just a slightly different fashion, given the setting, and none of it felt stupid or forced.
Yeah, which I think, because I read some reviews beforehand, and they were saying the problem with these things is that they take so long. Rather than a TV show, the actors get old. And Robert Downey Jr. has done so many of these already. He's like, I really don't want to keep doing this. I physically can't handle it.
Yeah.
You know, I want to do other things, blah, blah, blah. So if you look at the comparisons to this and Iron Man, it's almost note for note. But you're so dazzled, and it's just so it's done so differently in the details that you don't really notice until you're like, oh, that was a lot like Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know, he's an arrogant guy who gets hurt somehow, changes his life. He's got to learn a different way. He didn't know he could be. He learns to sacrifice himself. Yada yada yada. Saves the world from some villain.
Perfectly, I guess it is. Yeah.
You know, perfectly fine, because it was just done so different. You don't even notice. You're like, wow, this is cool. You know, like
look
at the city folding in on itself. Whoa.
Yeah, that was. I'm really glad we didn't see this in 3D.
Yeah, or IMAX. Whoa.
I mean,
yeah, special effects look pretty good.
I mean, there weren't very many of them. like, in a sense that they weren't, like, in your face. There was the obvious things that were supposed to look fake because they were fake. But the things that were supposed to look real, that were kind of bendy, they didn't focus on them too much. It ended up becoming just a giant kaleidoscope.
Yeah.
And rather than trying to force your attention on it, it becomes sort of like a visual white noise.
Yeah.
And then, which is great, because then you concentrate on the actual action happening in front of you within the characters,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was really... I mean, the thing that was great about all the fight scenes in this were that they were all different from each other.
Yeah.
There was not one fight scene that was the same.
That's a good point.
So you had the non-corporeal fight scene when they're, you know, like, their spirits are fighting each other. You have the one, there's more of a straight up one
in the Manhattan building.
Yeah, like, in the mansion kind of thing. And then they had the one in New York, in that sort of the mirror zone.
Yeah, they're like the mirror, like, you're right on the other side, but nobody can see you.
Yeah.
And anything you do in that world has no effect on the real world,
right.
which was cool, which was a way of being like, we can have this fight on the street in Manhattan and we don't have to worry about collateral damage and blah, blah, blah.
Right. And then there was one at the end when he's moving time backwards.
I thought that was great.
That was brilliant. I mean, it was
like, this is so cool.
It was sort of the icing on the cake to say, like, this is how we're going to, you know, finish this. Like, because essentially, there's not a tremendous amount of intricate plot that happens here, which is perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they barrel through his origin story in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, which I was kind of glad for. And I think they kind of knew, like, this is a lot like Iron Man. If you watch that first Iron Man, he's stuck in that cave a long time. And this one, it's like, look, he's an arrogant jerk. He can't use his hands anymore as a doctor. Boom, let's go to Nepal.
And I don't think an Iron Man being stuck in the cave for a while hurts the movie at all. I think it actually...
No, it's fine.
It's interesting because it's setting up stuff at the end, and B, you're watching him go through that growth process there.
Right.
He becomes Iron Man in that cave, and the rest of the time he's trying to perfect being Iron Man.
And I felt the same way with, like, Batman Begins, where people bitched him out, oh, he's not in the Batman suit for an hour. Yeah, but he's not doing nothing for an hour.
Yeah, he's learning, sitting there playing polo.
Yeah, like, he's getting trained as Batman. He's learning all the deception and theatrics and blah, blah, blah. You know, that's part of it.
Yeah.
And putting on the suit... He's still Batman before that. Like, he's just doing it outside of it. He's just doing it in a ninja suit instead.
Yeah, it's like with Daredevil on Marvel. I actually thought the suit looked better before they gave him the suit.
Yeah.
That kind of black mask thing was fantastic.
Yeah, he looked great in that.
Badass. No, I couldn't see anything at all.
But in this, all that setup is just him being a jerk. He's not learning anything yet until he gets to Nepal.
And it's something about Benedict Cumberbatch, the actor, that sells that really fast. You know, like, in everything he's in, he plays a jerk. You know, it's a different kind of jerk. People began to compare the character of Sherlock that he played with the guy from the Imitation Game, whose name I can't remember, which is sad because he invented computing and we should all know his name. And, like, they're not the same character at all, but they are in that sort of antisocial way, sort of standoffish and unapproachable, and so he sort of telegraphs that I'm somebody that's kind of a schmuck.
Yeah.
And it's you know, again, you just barrel through it. It's not that important. You know, you don't need to know that he's a jerk for that long. You need to know that he's a jerk. And also train of thought there for a second, but and then they get right to it. Like, is mm-hmm. and so, oh yeah, with the fight thing. So, like, once they're in, like, it's just a sequence of fights. That's really all that happens. There's fight, learn, fight. But every single one of them is entirely different from the other one. He fights the old lady. He fights his friend. You know, and, like, not one thing kind of repeats, which is great because they're essentially all just kicking each other's ass for 2 hours, which
yeah,
is
sure.
fine as long as you make that both visually and, you know, structurally more interesting. Excuse me.
Yeah, that was fine. Well, you know, what happens is they don't know what they're doing when they get too intricate. So you look back at Captain America Civil War and it's like, okay, this is so intricate it stopped making sense about 45 minutes ago.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's one of those things where, like, people complain about origin stories a lot because they're tired of them. And to an extent, that's true. But all the best ones are all origin stories.
Sure.
I mean, it's
this was a good origin story.
On the rare occasion that you know, like The Dark Knight is better than Batman Begins, mm-hmm. but not by a ton, you know.
I don't think so.
And
Batman Begins really holds up very well.
Yeah, and The Dark Knight does not as well, I think, but it's a better film. I think we have a certain kind of like, ooh, we were there first kind of connection to it. But they're also easy to tell. They have beginnings, middle, and ends. The other stories tend not to, and so as good as they can be, they're oftentimes, you know, they don't have a comfortable enough structure. And that, I think, is one of the larger problems in telling a 48-part story, is that if they're all connected, it's hard to watch any of them on their own. Then why not make TV shows about this?
Well, you have to relate to somebody and connect to them. So origin stories always start out with someone who doesn't know anything, just like you, the audience.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you watch him, he's a doctor in this, and then he gets to Nepal, and they start telling him about magic, and he just says, like, I don't believe in mumbo-jumbo and stuff like that. And then you go through it with him, and you go, oh, I learn as I go. And then they always do the sequel where you're supposed to just know that already. And usually what happens is a villain shows up, and the hero has to just sort of stop the villain. They always say this about Batman and Batman movies, like before The Dark Knight and all that. Batman is the cop stopping someone from doing something.
Yeah.
Now, so they're not... Batman's still the protagonist, but he's really the one trying to maintain the status quo, and you're more interested suddenly in the villain who's trying to disrupt everything.
Right.
So, origin stories, you're along for the ride, and then in the second one, you're like, I should know this, but maybe I don't. Maybe I miss. I don't remember. It came out 3 years ago.
Yeah, you need someone,
you know,
whose point of view you can latch onto and sort of ride it out. So as this person learns, you learn. You have a connection,
sure.
Such that when they go through an emotional change at some point, you can experience that little bit of catharsis with them, which is the basis of drama.
Like Captain America 2 is a really great movie, I think, because you did the same thing. I didn't know Hydra was inside S.H.I.E.L.D. and I didn't know my friend was now a super assassin, and I don't know who I can trust, and I have this thing for, you know, the old lady who's just sick in bed because we knew each other 70 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
Versus Civil War, where it's just them punching each other. He knows about Bucky already, and there's nothing new. Just watching them, how are they going to get from A to B?
They don't learn anything.
Well, they don't experience any growth.
Same thing. And I guess that's something that's missing from most of these movies.
Yeah, you're watching one more chapter.
Yeah, which is fine, but it's just not as interesting.
It was exciting, but you're not invested in it, really.
Right, yeah, you're not sort of...
So in this one, you definitely are, because not only do you have magic, which has not been seen before, but now you have a complete new character who doesn't know anything about it either.
Yeah. You know?
And he's a jerk, and you kind of want him to get his, you know. I know he's, especially as an adult, I know he's going to learn to be a nice guy.
Yeah.
If you're a little kid, you're like, oh, this guy's such a jerk. Oh, my God, now he's a good guy. Like, because you're dumb, you know. You've seen 30 of these things. It's like, oh, my God, just sacrifice yourself.
Would you believe the butler did it?
Yeah. You know she's going to end up with Richard Gere. I thought she was going to end up with that smarmy trust fund guy.
Smarmy Troy.
Oh, it was a Simpsons joke.
Right. I'm trying to think who this Smarmy Trust Fund guy is in. Jason Alexander? Oh, this is the same character.
Yeah.
I get the joke now. Moving on.
But I like the way that magic was handled, because they give you a small, like the ancient one played by Tilda Swinton. What's her name?
Swindon.
She knows all about Stephen Strange, who's a doctor of his top of his field, blah blah blah. I need to stop saying blah 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 so much. Yada yada yada. I'm really tired today. And she explains it to him that way. Like, think of them as programs that are throughout the universe, and we know how to harness them and make them work.
Yeah.
And sometimes we can bend them. It's like the Matrix. Sometimes we can bend them, but we shouldn't break them, because if we break them, sometimes they're irreversible.
Right.
You know, like time travel, and they tell him that. Like, he starts to mess around with the time travel, and they're like, if you break these rules, you might like wipe yourself out of existence. And I was like, that's a good way to put it. Like, they're already there. We're not conjuring things out of thin air.
Yeah.
It just looks that way.
Yeah.
And the universe is like layered on top of each other with multiple universes. I was like, okay, I can buy that.
Yeah, they gave it structure, and they gave it, you know, there was a construct.
Right. It had rules.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, you'd be.
Yeah.
Nothing would make any sense.
So, like, when. Right, because I thought that was important when the Ancient One is. She gets hurt by the villain and she, like, crashes through the floor and they bring her to a hospital and she has this big, long speech while she's, like, a ghost or an astral projection. But when she dies, that's it. She sort of, like, disappears. So you can't physically be a thing and not and just project your mind out into the distance.
You have to exist.
Okay, here we go. The same with the Matrix. You know, a lot of it felt like that to me, where you're strapped into the chair and you can break all the rules in the Matrix, but if they, you know, if someone blows your brains out in the chair, that's it, you're done.
You're over. Yeah, no.
So it's important to have rules, because once you don't, I immediately just throw my hands up and go, wait a minute. You start to question everything.
Yeah, well, why do anything?
Well, yeah, well, like, why doesn't he just zoom all the way to the villain and punch him in the head?
Yeah. I mean, even simple things, like, in terms of, like, how he got a hold of that that time-adjusting device.
Yes.
It was just...
The Infinity Stone.
And he was just playing with it when that thing happened. He was learning about this and that. Like, that, to me, is, like, good die-hard-type writing, where, like, you need this thing to happen for the purpose of the end of the movie, but, like, you can't make it look like, you know, why did he grab that thing? Like, so it was very cleverly interwoven into the story of him.
Yeah.
Of him being him still being an arrogant jerk. He never stops being an arrogant jerk, by the way. If you catch that?
Yeah.
Like, he becomes a noble arrogant jerk, but he's still kind of the same guy, which gives me hope for the sequel, the inevitable sequel, because... I'm afraid that, okay, now we have a new franchise that we like, Doctor Strange. It's good. It features an actor I admire, and, you know, the other people are good in it. Like the other guy, Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yes, Chiwetel Ejiofor is great.
He's fantastic.
And the whole time, because I knew that he plays Mordo, which is like, in the comics, I think he's known as Baron Mordo. And I knew they were going to be enemies. In this film, they're friends. They serve the same... order, like the Ancient One. And then at the end, he's like, that's it, I'm out of here. And I'm like, yes, he's going to come back because he's such a good actor.
Yeah, he's such like, a good
that
actor.
That is so exciting.
Yeah, he was. I first saw him in Serenity, the Firefly movie.
Yeah.
And he's a creepy son of a gun.
Yeah.
He is so
great in that.
Ruthless in that movie. In that kind of very scary sort of like, you know, well, I do murder children. Like, oh my God.
He can pull that off. And he's British too, isn't he?
I
think he is.
Yes.
Well, he definitely has an accent.
I want to say, I'm going to Google it. Chitwell, you. Trying to spell
his name
hilarious.
Is very difficult.
Yeah. British actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he has the accent. I wasn't sure if he was. He's from Forest Gate, London.
Cool.
So, anyway.
But, so, yeah, he was good. And, the magic thing. So I like that they have
everything, they couldn't do the thing without the ring.
They couldn't make portals anywhere unless they had like a little device, like their rings. And they said like with the weapons, you know, the weapons exist as constructs to harness magical programs or whatever that we can't do ourselves because they would hurt us. So like he says, my boots allow me to make leaps and jumps and save myself from falls. But they have to be. I have to be wearing the boots. I can't just do it.
Right.
So in that whole sequence in New York, Strange is flying with the cape. If you look at him closely, Mordo is sort of leaping. He doesn't fall, and you can see.
Actually missed it because there's too much action.
There was so much going on. But every so often, I would look, and he would like hop along the walls so he wouldn't hurt himself.
I saw him do that in that fight when he was explaining the boots.
Yeah.
He would jump in midair and sort of dance around above him.
Yeah.
For a minute, yeah.
And The Living Tribunal. I couldn't believe, like, what a really obscure reference.
Yeah, that was
reference.
A big mouthful. What the fuck was he talking about?
So, his, like, weapon, he goes, this is the weapon that draws power from the Living Tribunal. And the Living Tribunal is, like, the second most powerful thing in all of the Marvel Universe. It's this giant floating guy who passes judgment on everyone. And he has a head with three faces. One is covered, one is, like, half covered, and the other is open. And like,
I'm gonna Google that.
Yeah,
now. I think I remember seeing a picture of that somewhere, and it's creepy.
I just thought it was a nice little like, oh man, the Living Tribunal.
Yeah,
remember him?
I think I had that Marvel card.
Yeah,
You know, that's really where I get most of my knowledge about these things is from the Marvel
trading cards in the early 90s.
Oh, I totally had this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, cosmic beings.
The cosmic living... beings. What? Here's a funny comparison.
Okay, here we go. Mm. Just so the thing I loved about the Marvel cards was that on the back of them they had power ratings.
Yeah.
I have the Living Tribunal's power ratings right here. It's strength, intelligence, energy projection, mental powers, fighting ability, and speed. All of them are at 7 out of 7, except for fighting ability. Which at which point is that one?
Oh, one?
At which point, what does it matter if you're the second most powerful?
That's awesome.
Yeah,
we had a lot of those guys.
Actually, of all the incredible beings in the cosmos, none hold more power than the Living Tribunal. So according to this, he's the most powerful. The ultimate judge of creation, Jesus.
Yeah.
Whose task it is to maintain balance of power between the universes. Able to wipe out entire universes if necessary in order to protect this fragile balance, the Living Tribunal recently decided the fate of the near omnipotent Infinity Gems and ordered their possessor, the hero Adam Warlock, to disperse the gems among keepers of his choosing.
Yeah, that's those are the stones.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it was a funny comparison in that, like, J.R.R. Tolkien didn't just make the hobbits. He made an entire universe, you know. Gods, angels, demons, people.
Right.
They did the same thing with the Marvel universe. So, like, there's, like, the supreme beings below him, the Living Tribunal, things like that. Like, there's a whole thing. And it sounds dumb, but it makes it sound more authentic, too.
Well, yeah.
If you're into it. Also don't have to be, which is nice. Like, yeah. It's just nice background detail.
It's... The depth of the setting provides you with a sense of realism, even if what you're talking about is so insanely ridiculous. Like, you know, basically God.
Yeah, don't think about it too hard.
Yeah.
Or like Ego, the living planet. Basically a planet with a face and a giant mustache.
Really? Googling that. His name is Ego, the living planet.
The living planet.
He does have a mustache.
It's like Yosemite Sam's face on the side of the moon.
My God, it is. That's bizarre. But yeah, so like, I mean, that's one of the things that helped Star Trek get along. You know, that's what, you know.
Yeah, the more details than you have.
You know, the more questions you can answer.
Right.
Even if you, like, and.
The important ones.
There's a finesse to answering them. You know, you like. The opposite of finesse would be that line thrown into Batman v Superman, where he goes, like, the complaints from the previous film were that the buildings fell down during the daytime and everyone would have died. Thousands, if not millions, of people all over the world were killed on this single day. And in this one line, the...
Downtown is clear. Everyone's gone home from work today.
It's just the Ecuadorian janitors who are being... crushed under buildings.
The street sweepers.
Yeah. Just all the undocumented migrant farmers and immigrants.
Little people.
So, like, that's doing a ham-fisted job of that. But if you set it up such that everyone's got a role to play and everyone's got rules and they can all interact with each other in an interesting way, then that takes care of a lot, because you got to sell this. It's ridiculous.
You have to sell it. And you have to do it in the right way. So DC has those shows on TV, the Arrow and the Flash and everything. And they're pretty good. And they're much better than the movies. They still have some CW-ish to them. But, you know, I like them because they're not like Smallville in that they shy away from what they really are. It's a superhero show. Own it.
That really, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. And like...
I liked that show for the first 6 years it was on. And then after that, I go, so you're never going to... all right.
They're just never going to... And they said, like, we're never going to have them do that. I think if that show had come out now, it'd be much better.
I think it would be, but I think it should be. It was on for 10 years.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't say we're never going to put him in the tights.
But, I mean, now it's cool to be a superhero.
Right, but, like, that can't be that. You get sick of it. You want to see the thing.
I watched that show when it first came out, and then I stopped because I was like, well, where is this going? Is he ever going to be Superman? And
No.
And I was like, well, then I'm out. But... On Arrow, Arrow started off as a very gritty, realistic show. He ran around the city shooting people, like murdering them with bows and arrows. And there was no talk of superpowers and magic. And all. He was just a regular guy, like Batman. Yeah. So it was cool. And then two or three seasons in, they started doing the League of Assassins. Okay. Ninjas in the city. I can sort of buy that. And they started getting more and more serious to sort of justify, like, we're taking it seriously. Even though there's ninjas, it's still a dramatic thing. All right. Fourth season was all about some guy who had magic powers. And it got really out of hand because they played that seriousness so much. It was so dark and dramatic, even though there was magic powers happening. I was like, now it feels fake.
You know what that reminds me of? That show, Sliders.
Yeah,
remember that? Sliders was this great...
That first season was pretty good.
Yeah, it was this great sci-fi show that starred Jerry O'Connell and
Jonathan
John Rhys-Davies of Lord of the Rings fame. He played Gimli, the dwarf. Even though he's like 6'5".
Yeah.
Great old British actor. Apparently, he tells lots of fun stories about Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, and it's all those really like old Hollywood Rat Pack days, but like from the other side of the pond kind of thing. And anyway, so the show was this guy in his basement invents a portal device that looked like our brother's old cell phone. Because it was the same kind of thing.
Yeah, like that old gray one with the tiny flip thing.
Yeah, it was this, weighed about 9 pounds. And, he could just point it at the wall and boom, there's a portal to another dimension that's almost entirely like ours except for like one or two differences. And it was really fun because it was kind of like one of those what-if things that people love to talk about. Like, what if the South won the Civil War or... I remember like there was one episode where they were going around like, we can't find what's wrong with this place. Everything appears to be
they
the same.
They thought it was their planet.
But the Golden Gate Bridge was blue.
Yeah.
It was the only thing. And I think after that, like a few more things began to pop up. Like, this is not right.
Yeah. Like, but nothing like earth shattering.
Yeah, it was something bizarre. There was one where like, the planet's so overcrowded that if you win the lottery, you get like, a bajillion dollars, but you have to commit suicide.
Yeah, they kill you at the end.
It's one where the women are in charge and the men are subservient. Like, all these kind of fun twists.
The one that didn't have penicillin?
Oh.
There was one
where that at all.
There was one where there was like a super flu going around and like one of them catches it and there's like a police crackdown kind of city and they're trying to get through it. And it's not until the end of the episode that they realize, like, John Rhys-Davies is like, well, what about... this, did you try this and this and this? And he says penicillin. And they're like, we don't even know what that is. And then that's the big twist. They don't have penicillin.
Yeah.
It's just like the flu that they have. And I was like, oh, that is so cool.
Which is ironic because penicillin would have invented the super flu.
Yeah. Well, it's just a cheesy show on Fox.
Right. But that's the fun part about it was that it was almost like the Twilight Zone, because you're in the same place, but so one thing is different.
Everything else is different.
And there were twists at the end of things.
They were all like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the twist.
But then, I guess they decided that was too cerebral for everybody, so they had to invent an alien species, like the Morlocks or whatever.
That
also had sliding technology. And then
suddenly every Joe Schmo on the block had their own sliding device. But so, their portals were red.
Yeah. So they would slide into worlds that were, they were Earth, but they were Earth that was taken over by these evil aliens. And like, I don't remember anything after that because I was just, as a kid, like, oh, this is good.
As a kid, you start to realize, like, what happened
this
here?
This is sort of stupid. And I don't know. But. That was like you begin to rewrite the rules. You begin to change what the whole thing is about, and you can't do that.
certain things you have to take. It's magic. I get it. There's a little bit of a wink and a nod. The cape has its own a mind of its own.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
And they reference it. It's it interacts with the real world. She's not just, but it loses integrity once you begin to manipulate the setting or. Yeah, you change it, or you don't set it up strongly enough that it can withstand
right.
a variety of stories.
So, like, that was the problem with Arrow, was that I've had 3 years of no magic whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then, all of a sudden, the villain has magic, and it's impossible to get anywhere near him, and only one character knows how to stop him, blah, blah, blah. Where was this? I don't understand. And then, in this movie, magic is there the minute he shows up in Nepal, and they just start to explain it to him.
And,
they say, this has been going on around you, and you just haven't noticed.
Yeah. You.
Everyone has the ability to do this.
I liked her analogy of the keyhole. I thought that was really clever. Mm-hmm. That she says, you've been looking through a keyhole trying to get all the information to do all the things that you can do and save lives and this kind of this and that. But I forget what was it like. We're actually going to open the door for you.
Yeah, now you have a chance to open the door a little bit, and you won't look.
Yeah, you can't widen the keyhole, but you can open the door. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good way of looking at it. It's a way of saying you're limited by. You think you're really smart because you've done this much, and that's great, good for you, but it's only this far. You know, it's like the book I read about the guys who were two fat guys trying to hike the Appalachian Trail, and they get to the first big rest spot, and they go, oh, look how proud we are, and they go look at a map, and they've only got like an inch.
Yeah, like, oh my God.
Son of a bitch, we have to go all the way to Maine? Oh my goodness. So, yeah, that's...
Did you have any problems with the movie?
None that leaped out at me. I loved the humor too. I thought that humor was used very effectively in it. You know, they and not too like there's that one.
It
scene,
wasn't like jokey.
There was one joke. The library.
Yeah,
he was pulling the books.
Yeah,
and like I learned how to open a portal, and I'll just sneak in here and grab this book and that book, and I'll kind of tease this guy.
Yeah, and that strikes me as like we came up with this scene. It doesn't really fit, but. We're gonna put it anyway.
No, it made sense.
Like it didn't hurt the movie, but no, I actually, like, oh, that's a little cheesy.
Well, I thought that it demonstrated that even though now he has magic powers, but he's still an arrogant jerk.
Yeah,
you know?
That was good. Like he keeps going to the library. Like I finished this book. What else you got?
Yeah, and although I hate the term photographic memory, it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
There is a term for that. It's called an eidetic memory. It's
Captain America is supposed to have that too.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
If you want, in the very first Captain America, when he saves Bucky, like they do a raid on the Red Skull's fortress. Like he's saving all his buddies.
Yeah.
His first big mission.
Sure.
He looks at a big map of where all the Hydra bases are. He just sort of glances at it.
Right.
And then when they go back and they make him a captain and blah, blah, blah. Damn it. He points out where all the bases are. And they're like, are you sure? He goes, well, I only got a glance at it. But the idea was that he memorized the entire map in 2 seconds because he has a photographic memory.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting. I didn't know
that. Doesn't come into play any other time. But.
Yeah, well, kind of. He's not an idiot. He's just
right.
Sort of like, that's the nice thing about Captain America. He's just
dense.
He's not dense. He's just... He's
and earnest.
his character is such, like his you know, moral fortitude is such that, you know, he has a hard time understanding the evil he's fighting, which is sort of his crutch, I guess, like the thing that kind of makes him both weak and different. Like he understands how to fight someone, but he still doesn't understand why they behave the way they do.
Yeah,
which kind of makes him almost endearing.
It does
in a way.
It makes him rely on other people as well.
Yeah,
like I can't punch my way out of this because I don't understand what I'm doing.
Right. He's basically a more human
Superman.
Well. He has more humility than Superman would have.
Definitely. Yeah,
which is, again, it makes him, makes you a deeper character than Superman is.
But, that was a joke. In the library, it was pretty jokey. And, like, he's still a jerk, so he...
Yeah, it was, there needs to be levity in this. And there was,
mm-hmm.
You know. Because, I mean, he really, he's such an intense guy. He really is. But no, nothing really bugged me. I should say one thing, one of those total movie goofs in the scene when he's at his wit's end with trying to find treatments to do things for to fix his hands. He's talking to that guy on his little Microsoft thing, and then he gets mad and throws it across the room, and then she comes in, and the next thing you cut to it, it's back on the table.
Oh, was it? Oh,
yeah, it was one of those things like, all right. it's just you threw it 2 seconds ago, and it was like, oh, look. Microsoft, like it made a thing about how it was product placement. I noticed that, but I don't think anything. I mean, Mads Mikkelsen and the bad guys were a little one note in a sense. Like, you didn't really get a sense as to what their motivations were, and they were never at any point redeemable. Like, it's one of the things about a lot of bad guys in these shows is that either they've gone off the rails and they used to be good, which I guess he was, but you never saw him as such. You only saw him
You only heard that he was
as a decapitating maniac.
Yeah, what was that about?
Yeah.
And they put it in the bucket. I'm like, is that going to come into play later? And it didn't? I
was no.
Like, oh,
it was
I wonder where the bucket is right now.
It's a long walk for a short drink.
Just, chuck it down the mountain.
I guess they're trying to catch all the, save all the, I don't know. yeah, I thought that they served a purpose. They did nothing else but that, though. There was nothing, there was no depth to that whatsoever.
Yeah, and they gave him the speech. You know, served Dormammu, who's Strange's big villain in the comics. He's like the evil entity from the other dimension or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, they have, we search for eternal life. And that was a big thing between them and the Ancient Ones, that you don't live forever. But you can live forever if you team up with Dormammu, because he makes you like a zombie or something. Not clear. And that they don't know either.
Yeah. That was the most interesting and the most confusing thing about the movie, was that she was siphoning off power.
Yeah, from the, like the Dark Realm or something.
Did the evil talking head know that?
I think you can just access powers from there.
Oh.
But you don't, because you tend to like get corrupted.
Right.
And that was Yzefor's problem, was like, you can't use that power. It makes you evil at some point. You know, the bill comes due, he says a couple times in the film, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, no. It was a good character point for him. It also firmly established that, like, there are rules here. Yeah. You cannot break them. If you do, there are consequences to them. It's not just willy-nilly whatever.
You know, like, how does she live for so long if she keeps espousing the fact that everyone dies? Well, turns out she was, you know, you don't see her do it, but she siphons energy from the Dark Realm. And that's what, how do you say his first name? Mads Mikkelsen?
Mads.
Yeah, Mads Mikkelsen was just like, we should all just go over there and we'll all live forever. Not realizing that there'd probably be zombies or something if they do that. Because the Dark Realm, it looks terrible. Like, you wouldn't want to go there.
That was sort of the thing, too. And, like, thinking about, like, nitpicky stuff, I guess, but like when he's got him, you know, in that like funny looking, you know, full body handcuff thing, and he's talking to him. He's like, well, you know, I used to be like you, and she collects broken things, and she's using them for her own purposes. And but this guy, you know, Dormammu really knows what's going on, and
he's all, up front about it.
You know, we can all live in paradise. And he's like, just look at your face, he says.
Yeah.
And that was both funny and but like kind of. Like, yeah, why doesn't this guy realize? Like, I guess he's so blinded. Like they said, like his entire family was killed, or everyone he loved had been killed.
Yeah, he lost everything.
So he came to them and was looking to, you know, everyone comes there looking for answers to their problem, and they find out, here's the one, now that I'm really kind of working it out loud, because usually we have time to digest these things,
yeah.
And this time we're doing it live for your benefit.
You're in the theater right now.
But like, everyone goes there because they have a problem,
right?
Yeah, there's something that's wrong with them that they want to get fixed, and the thing that you're supposed to understand is that the Ancient One teaches you that you don't need to get fixed. That, you know, it's kind of like you're just as good as you are. You know, you're no worse than you were before. You know, love. You have to love who you are, kind of thing. It's one of those things where, like, you know, you look at the deeper truth and understand that you can't go back in time, you can't fix everything, and you have to love yourself for who you are. Fine. But that first guy got fixed and went back to his regular job.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. So,
but
he turned his back on something.
But he turned his back. So
he could have been one of those guys.
I think that's the idea, is that when you go there to get fixed and teach me how to. I can't walk anymore. My hands shake. You know, I've lost everything. The idea is that you stay there and you work with them from now on, and you find a higher calling, and that there is no higher calling than the one that you're now on. And that's why when, Stephen Strange has a conversation with them at some point where he goes, I'm not in for that. I don't want to fight evil wizards. Like, he's like, I just came to fix my hands.
Yeah.
And then they realize that the guy who, in the beginning, who set it all up, They say he turned his back. It was too high a price. He wasn't willing to give up his life.
Right.
And he was selfish. And Stephen Strange eventually, at the end, of course, does. I will watch over this penthouse in New York because it's important.
Yeah.
I'll have to give up being a surgeon. So
I guess my thing is like, well, if that guy just turned his back and was selfish and didn't, you know, just now has all, you know, has the use of his legs now, when does his bill comes due at the
End.
At this, wow, yeah, okay, work that one out. Fascinating. All right. See, this is why we do this.
Yeah. Now we do this with all of them.
Yeah. By the way, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the movie, which I can't imagine why you would be doing that.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. But you should also know there are two post-credit sequences.
Yeah.
So don't order the jumbo soda.
All I had was the popcorn. That was like a dried corn husk at the end. It was so salty. And you even said, you're like, you're not going to get a drink? I'm like, no, I'll be fine. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I knew that was a mistake.
My lips were all chapped like I've been in the desert.
Like I said there, I'm like, I could get food. I'm trying to live some way. I should skip this. I'm going to have dinner later. And then you walk you with popcorn and go,
popcorn?
What, nothing? Nothing else? <Yeah. laughs> just plain old salty popcorn?
Juji fruits?
Not even a bottle of water?
No. Well, a bottle of water is like $10 at the movies. That popcorn I got was $4.
That wasn't so bad. The ticket was only $8.
Well, we got the matinee.
Well, yeah.
Let's be real.
But not many places do a matinee anymore. Now, matinee is like Tuesday through Wednesday before 11 a.m.
Yeah. I did that all summer. It was such a bummer.
Having, you know, you're sitting there, you know, having a bacon, egg, and cheese with your movie.
Yeah.
That's when you get the matinee price. Otherwise, $15.30, please.
Okay. It's you and every old person. Yeah. What is this? Mr. Strong? No, it's just watch the movie.
Yeah. So, but not, I mean, so I guess, the, you know, now we've talked about some of those things, there's nothing really that I could say that bothered me about the film. You know, I mean, it's the sort of one-noteness of
the story.
Of the villains.
Of the villains, which happens in all these Marvel movies.
Yeah. Sort of. Because more often than not, there's really nothing that the bad guy, I mean, maybe it's just because we've exhausted everything, but like, what could the bad guy want that would be more interesting?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a comic book thing, and usually comic book villains just want to take over the world.
Yeah, like, I totally get that. I mean, some of the more interesting, I'm just trying to think of the more interesting villains I've seen. Mr. Freeze, I would say, is probably one of the most interesting villains in the Batman franchise, because he doesn't want to take over anything. He's just trying to, you know, save his frozen wife. Mm-hmm. And all of his, you know, decisions are based on a very, you know, selfless sort of thing where, yeah, he goes to great lengths to do, you know, and it's sort of protracted, but that's...
Yeah, there was a really good episode where he runs around ruining, and that the old Batman show where he goes around ruining people's stuff. So, like, priceless artwork that belonged to them he would destroy, and like, vintage cars he would destroy. And, like, Batman's trying to figure out the pattern. Like, why is he just destroying all those priceless, valuable things? And he said, like, in my research, I've come to the point where I can't help my wife anymore, and now I'm so mad I'm going to destroy everybody else's stuff that they love. Huh. And that was the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it was just... I mean, it's not a great motivation, but it's a little more nuanced than normal.
Yeah.
You know, because the whole episode was not Batman fighting him. It was Batman trying to figure out the pattern. Like, I don't understand. What does the art dealer have to do with the car guy and the people at the zoo, like caring for the animals and stuff like that? And you're like, oh my God, is he really going to kill those animals?
Did he?
No.
Okay.
Batman saved the day. Okay. It was a cartoon.
At 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And like the Joker in, the Joker in general, but specifically like is the Joker in The Dark Knight, which is still an extension of the other, but like he has nothing to gain.
Right.
Like, his thing is whereas Strange has a very specific thing he's trying to save his wife, Joker is just trying to take advantage of a situation that's arisen for no other reason than he just thinks it'd be fun. It's the opposite. He has no plan. It's just...
Yeah,
it's all just cause and effect. It's, you know, there's no ultimate goal.
And he only gets away with that because he's totally manic and entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
You know, if you were Mr. Freeze speaking on a monotone, you're like, all right, what? Why am I following this weirdo for?
Yeah, but like, because it was such, the performance was so remarkably engaging, and so different than the previous movie too. Like, you know, Batman came into the, you know, it was organized crime he was fighting, and he had the help of some crazy guy with a mask. You know, I'll never forget when they said that Scarecrow was going to be the villain of that movie. Like, a Scarecrow? Yeah, I was like, really?
Because at that point, too, they were like, it's going to be realistic Batman. I'm like, but they picked the Scarecrow?
Yeah.
Like, the guy with the funny mask? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
He's a Scarecrow?
Yeah. At some points, he's literally a Scarecrow.
So, yeah. Anyway, but, like, villains are really hard to do in this case because you're right. Like, their ultimate goals, motivations are essentially irrelevant. Why they want to do it, you know, those can be interesting and they can be varied. But the goal is almost always the destruction of something on a large scale.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, and that's why in, like, Thor it kind of works, because they all talk in that sort of, you know, realmy king type, you know, medieval sort of way, which works. Terrorism, too, is another kind of good go-to these days. Like, all the Bond movies are really based on just people trying to make money, you know, by being terrorists of one kind or another. And
yeah,
it was sort of refreshing in a Bond movie. It's like, you know, everything got really grounded in those. He wasn't a gentleman spy. He was an assassin. He goes there to kill people. No bones about it. And the guys he was trying to kill were just regular people trying to rip off the world and, you know, run their little organization undetected. But even like at the, I was just watching Spectre the other day, like they're in that giant type lair in the middle of that crater, which is a great lair.
In the middle of the desert, yeah.
Yeah. But what is it? It's just a big computer.
Yeah.
It's just gathering information. He didn't even ask them, what is this place? This is information. Information is everything.
Yeah, it's my hub.
Yeah. You know, it's all it is. I don't know why I needed to be in the desert.
And it's, and like I was telling you earlier, I was watching Age of Ultron with Jackie last night, and only like from the middle to the end, because she didn't really, wasn't really paying attention.
That was that.
And, and if you watch in the movie, Ultron gets onto the internet, and he's everywhere. Like, that's why he's every single robot. Like, if they blow up one robot, he's in the other robot right next to it.
Yeah.
And the idea was that he was trying to get the nuclear codes to blow up the entire planet and kill everybody. And he couldn't. And that's why he decided, because he puts all the rockets inside the landmass, and he's going to drop the landmass on the planet like a comet and kill everybody that way.
Sure.
And so, like, the planet, like, the landmass is up in the air. And Jackie goes, why is he doing this? I was like, well, he can't get the nuclear codes. So he can't use the weapons. He's using it like a comet. She goes, there was nothing in the middle he could have done. Like, like the tanks all over the world turned against people. Okay, I can't use nuclear weapons. What's the next biggest thing? No, bigger. I got it. Bigger than that. Comets. Those work. They'll kill everything.
I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Like Matt Mickelson's plot, you know, premise in this one. Okay, I want my planet to be taken over by an evil entity so we can all live forever. Even that made a little more sense.
Yeah, it actually kind of does. It's like, I think about in Inside Out, when like the angry little guy in her brain still wants to do the right thing for the little girl. He's like, if we go back to Minnesota, everyone will be happy again.
Yeah.
And so he's thinking, all right, great. If we go contact this Dark Lord and have him subsume the entire Earth, everything will be happy again. It's insane, but it's following a logic that he understands. Sure. And I can see why a crazy person might think that.
Yeah.
You know, but when I can't think why a crazy person would do something, then you've lost me. Like, Ultron's thing doesn't make any sense. That movie's terrible.
That movie's not so good. Yeah. But even in Guardians of the Galaxy, when they had that guy, like, it's implied that his side is part of a war that lost, and there's a peace treaty and he doesn't agree with, and therefore he's just going to get revenge on people as long as he has the Infinity Stone or Thanos to help him, because he can't do it by himself. He's like a renegade kind of guy.
Yeah.
All right, I got that. And I had never seen any of those characters before.
Yeah, and that's really over the top in that movie, but it's clear.
Yeah.
You know, being over the top, you can be as outlandish as humanly possible. It doesn't matter so long as I understand.
Like, he takes it seriously.
Yeah. As long as I get how you're getting from point A to point B, even if it, you know, seems a bit silly, it's not confusing. You know, it's when it gets confusing, you kind of go, well, why would he do that? That's when the movie's over.
Mm-hmm.
You can just stop right there. I mean, and Jackie's right. Like, we couldn't do this one hard thing, so I'm going to do something absolutely ludicrous instead. Prepare for ludicrous speed.
We've gone plaid. But I thought that Rachel McAdams' character was a little sidelined. She was fine, but she only sort of popped up when he needed her.
Yeah.
And she was there.
There's sort of not a lot for her to do. She comes in to, you know, be the new, like, you know, how you're following Strange and his journey through this bizarre experience. And you kind of get comfortable looking at, okay, sure, magic. Yeah, fine. Weapons he can make out of his hands, whatever. Everybody experiences, why not? But then you need kind of a refresher in that to keep the humor up and, you know, keep the story going, where he now shows her and you look at it through her eyes. You go, yeah, this is pretty freaking weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would say that she's underused, but I don't know what more she could have done.
And see, I don't think she was underused.
Okay.
Like, I can see what you mean in that she's not in it a lot. But I think that's just because there's no room for her.
Yeah.
Which is fine. The same thing happened with Iron Man. He has a girlfriend and a love interest, and she's involved, but not so much because the movie is about him.
Right.
Which is fine.
And I think that there's, it's something to be said for the fact that these are really all just boy movies. I can't think of a way to introduce a woman character into them that's androgynous enough to be interesting. Like, I'm watching Battlestar Galactica. That is a mouthful of a Battlestar Galactica.
Take
right
those
now.
Marbles out of your mouth. Oh, that's much better.
Oh, there they are.
There you go.
All right, so, and the character of Starbuck on that show, played by Katie Sackhoff, who was a male character in the original show, is fantastic.
Yeah, I heard she's really good.
As a female character, because she's tough as nails, you know, like a real sort of, you know, drinker and a brawler and a whole thing. And at the same time, when things go wrong, she cries unabashedly. Like, the character's not afraid to do that at all. And I mean, that to me is without a doubt the best articulation of a strong female character that retains a natural sense of femininity. There just isn't a better one. I don't care who you are, but, like, you know, where you kind of straddle both those worlds, because, you know, Wonder Woman, I just saw a trailer for today. Tough as nails, Wonder Woman. All kinds of fighting bad guys and, you know, lassos, and she's nude the whole time. Practically naked. Whereas the Starbuck character dresses like a man the whole time. She's totally masculine in the clothing.
Well, Wonder Woman was drawn in, like, the 30s.
Yeah, I understand, but they didn't bother to go, maybe she shouldn't be fighting people in a miniskirt.
And heels.
Maybe that makes no effing sense whatsoever. Nah, we'll keep it in. It's fine. You know, like, that's... So, but yeah, there wasn't really much for her to do, and... Which is okay, because chances are she would have just become, like, the love interest, and I think that she's a better actress than that Rachel McAdams. She could handle a bigger role than that, but one doesn't exist in these movies.
Yeah. Well, you know...
I guess Black Widow is pretty.
But from all the women I've ever met that go to these things, they don't want to watch women. I'm sure I've said this before because now it's coming back to me. They don't want to watch women do things that men do. That's not interesting to them.
Paul Feig, are you listening?
So, like, yes, Black Widow does the same thing that Captain America does. She, like, even though she has no superpowers, she can beat everybody up with the best of them. And I take my girlfriend to see, she didn't want to see this one, but I take her to see these movies, and she's just not, she doesn't care. She's not interested.
Yeah.
I'm not saying she just wants to watch princess stuff. I'm just saying this thing doesn't interest her just because she's a woman.
Right.
So when they're always saying, like, there's no roles for women, these are just for boys, it's not the characters, it's the material.
Yeah.
It's not that he's a man, it's that he's running around the town fighting people in either a robot suit or with a giant hammer.
He's green.
Or he's a giant monster. I mean, they're just not interested in that. It's boring to them, you know?
Yeah. So, not as simple. It's actually not about their chromosomes.
Yeah. And yeah, basically. But Rachel McAdams, I feel, in this movie was just, I wasn't sure. Like, he says that they used to go out, but then they stopped and they were just friends, but he keeps going back to her. It's not clear.
Yeah, that's okay. It's that.
Yeah.
They used to have a relationship, but now they don't.
They just needed it. You know what's really interesting, too, about comic book movies? So now, before he, in the beginning of the movie, before he's hurt himself and goes to Nepal, it takes place around the same time as Iron Man 2, which came out, I don't know, 2011, 2010? But they can't say that because it's comic book imaginary land where these things sort of exist in a vacuum.
Yes and no.
So it's kind of, you know, like they don't tell you. Like, it's easy to say the not too distant future. It's not easy to say the not too distant past. You know? And like, they mention the Avengers.
Yeah, they all kind of.
But they don't, you know, they leave it pretty vague as to when everything is going on.
Yeah. I was curious to see what his watch was in this.
I'm sure it was a.
Couldn't quite.
$400,000 watch.
Possibly around $62,000.
Ah, that's all? Well, she gave it to him, but it was engraved on the back.
Right, it was from her. It's a Swiss watch, Jaeger LeCoultre.
Oh.
Not familiar with this company.
How nice.
I started following Omega on Instagram because they have fun pictures of the watch. I think that they make neat looking watches. Michael Phelps is sponsored by them. So, because and I just, you know, during the Olympics, I was looking at all the different swimmers' profiles, and so now I get these pop up things for all these different watches, like, oh, and they're all like 10 grand each. I'm like,
yeah,
I have a nice watch. It's not quite that expensive, but you gotta consider that bomb movie that one time.
Yeah, that was good. That was a good time.
But now, like, that's all my feed is just pictures of my friends, and you know, Taylor Swift, and watches I can't afford to buy.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to own one of these, but yeah, I like the idea that like watches were like that was the thing he held on to, and in that he wears it and it's broken,
yeah,
kind of thing. Yeah, that was kind of neat.
Well, I don't think he's coming.
No,
I mean, I actually like this movie. People are always surprised when I like things.
Really?
Yeah, no, weird.
I guess most things are shit, right? That's pretty much true.
Well, I don't feel bad criticizing things.
No.
It's fun.
No. But, I don't think he's going to... Don't think he's going to make it. We have all this beer for him. We'll have to drink it all.
I guess so.
All right.
All right. You got a top three?
Oh, we haven't done this in a while.
Well, we haven't done a movie in a while.
That's true. We've been doing... Yeah, and then last one was Luke Cage and... Just kind of all over the place trying to make up for the fact that we watched the entire thing and it wasn't that good.
It wasn't
that
good.
All right, so do you have a thing on your... As I haven't thought about it at all.
Your favorite fight scene.
Okay.
The character you liked the least. Because there was a lot of people in this movie.
Yeah.
And how you want to see him work with the Avengers.
Ah.
Because of that mid-credit scene I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, favorite fight scene, I think, was the one where everything else is going backwards. Because it was
me too. I thought that was so cool.
It was so cool.
Just cool.
I mean, I liked the one.
It was like bullet time for the first time.
Yeah, it was sort of like, it forced you to think about how they were going to get around and not hurt anybody. Because they were all in the same space. They were existing in the same space. Because it was like the last thing. Oh, the kind of like... Like every time they kind of saddled in for a new fight where they all kind of stood at opposite ends of it and kind of, you know, like pick their elbows up.
The hand motions.
Yeah, here we go. I go, all right, here we go again. Oh, no, it's better than I thought. Like, I was pleasantly surprised. And that was the last one. I go, well, okay, one more time. Oh, no, it's better than I thought. Like, it improved each time. So there was the best fight scene. That was the second one, though. There was
a character you liked the least.
Character I liked the least. It's hard to say. My instinct is just to say the bad guy, because we've talked about how that was the least interesting part of the movie. It's either him or the doctor in the beginning was a bit of a jackass.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, yeah, no, the bad guy. I mean, but it's not his fault. Like I was kind of feel bad calling out a character I don't like because of the actor. But no, you did fine, Mads.
Yeah, he's good.
Even though he can never look, like, he can never play a good guy.
No,
he's such an obvious.
He didn't even look good in this. Like they gave him that silly eye thing.
The eye thing was. Yeah, that's true. That I would have done more with. It was also sort of obviously Mads Mikkelsen.
Well,
I don't know why that bothered me because they were all obviously somebody else I knew from a different movie.
Well, he's always played bad guys. So yeah, he was just used to him being another bad guy.
Yeah, he was in the Bond movie. He was Hannibal in Hannibal. You know, yeah. Like yeah, it's. So that was the sort of yeah the least interesting character to me, and I'm based on the post credit sequence with. Him and Thor, I'd love to see a buddy movie with him and Thor.
Yeah.
That looked funny already. And I think that, yeah, I think that'd be good. I think this, you know, one of the nice things about that, we were talking about that last Star Trek movie, was that it was a buddy picture for a lot of it. And they can be fun if you take people who are opposite of each other. And I can't think of people who are more opposite than Thor and this guy, right? Like,
yeah.
Too similar. I mean...
Thor and Doctor Strange?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, they both kind of had this magic thing going on, but Thor is all about, you know, brains, and Doctor Strange is all about, you know, being essentially infirmed and unable to fight without magic
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. So.
Yeah, I think it's clever if they start pairing them together.
Yeah.
So at the end of Captain America Civil War, the idea was that Thor left. Like, Thor had been gone after the Avengers, too. He went back to Asgard or something. And then Hulk disappears as well. Like, he pilots a ship and no one can find him. And like, Thor's going to be... Hulk's going to be in the new Thor movie. And they kept saying it's going to be the two of them most of the time together.
Okay, well then...
And in this one, they said it'll be Doctor Strange. They hint Doctor Strange will hang out with Thor. And I'm like, both of those are great. I would pay to see both of those films.
Yeah.
Because you have two characters. Maybe they don't get along or they have very opposite sensibilities.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the, you know.
Captain America and Iron Man didn't get along, and they dragged everybody else into it, but
yeah,
that was an interesting thing.
That was the crux of that movie. That was the best part of the movie, even though the rest of the explosions got in the way and grabbing every character from every which way that you could. Yeah, I mean, and it's tricky to find, because they're all sort of, they all have the same sort of goal, and like, you want to look at a great buddy cop movie. Or like buddy picture, you look at like Men in Black.
Yeah,
that's like the quintessential, you know, buddy picture. And what was funny, I heard an interview with Barry Sonnenfeld. I think it's the director of both that and Wild Wild West. Mm-hmm. And one of the many reasons that Wild Wild West was one of the worst movies ever made.
There's a lot of reasons for that.
That he broke the rule where you have a straight man and a funny man, and in Wild Wild West you had two funny men.
Mm-hmm.
So you're basically trying to one-up each other in an awkward way that has nothing to do with the story.
Are you listening, Paul Feig? Once again.
He should be writing this down, shouldn't he?
I hope you're digging notes.
Christ almighty.
We'll never work in Hollywood.
No.
But you're right.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then, yeah, so what are your
I agree with all of those.
Oh. Well, there we are. That's a first.
I know. It was great. Well, that last fight scene I thought was very interesting. It was because it was easy to follow.
That's the other thing too. There wasn't really, and this is something I usually notice after the fact, which is appropriate
mm-hmm.
to say like, oh yeah, I didn't have a problem looking at any of this stuff. It all made sense to me visually. Like at the end of Mad Max, when you went, you know, you understood every frame of that movie.
Yeah.
Nothing was obscured.
I can still remember it. Because, like, if my brain can't process it, it just goes out the window.
It's not going to stick around.
You know, and in this one, there was a lot going on, but the stuff I could focus on was fine.
Yeah.
And
the fight scenes, they all had objectives, too. They all had things, little tricks, the doors that would take you to different parts of the world.
Yeah.
You know, and how he would kick them through it and then spin them around. And yeah.
You know, things would go backwards, but you're going forwards. And it wasn't so chaotic that I was like, wait, what? Or I barfed or whatever, you know?
And that visual thing where, like, initially the bad guys were sort of going backwards as well. He was turning everything
right. Away. Like, he had to bring them in to going forwards.
Yeah. I forget why he did that.
Because he did that to Chiwetel Ejiofor. He's like, help me. As they're going backwards, we'll fix things. Like, we'll beat them up.
Right.
And then like they started to figure out how to get out of that, the other magicians.
Yeah.
And but there was like a thing they went through, like they got warped first.
So yeah, they had like a visual kind of like,
yeah, they get like distorted. Yeah. And then now he's in on it too.
Yeah.
So but like
they brought like the fat guy into it.
Yeah, the fat guy. And I remember because like everybody else around them is not, and they're moving backwards, and you're watching the city be like fixed instead of destroyed. So like the person who's lying dead on the ground gets sucked back into their car through their windshield.
Remember
that?
Like,
oh my god,
that was fucking cool. I mean, yeah. it was like you kind of didn't realize what was happening until it was almost over. Like that was a dead person.
Yeah,
gee, like that like, was about as graphic as it gets. In some of these things.
Like people were like fleeing rubble and like fires exploding around them, and like the villain gets hit with the she's getting burned by the flames coming out of the manhole, and then the manhole cover hits her as it's way down. Onto the street, if you call it. I was like, well, like that's what would happen.
Yeah, they had to, like, they had to both be in it and around it all at the same time.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
Really, really neat.
The only thing I didn't
okay.
The only thing I didn't like about the villains was the heroes too. Sometimes, like, they didn't have weapons; they conjured them,
right?
And they became magical constructs. The heroes always had, like, they looked like flames, like bright orange weapons, like circles and whips.
Yeah.
But the villains had these distorted. They used like time magic, right? Or like they were very hard to see.
They were hard to see. There was a reason that was like something from. They were fighting with things from the mirror.
Was it from the mirror universe thing?
Yeah. That was her big thing. They're doing what now? Oh my God.
Yeah.
That they stumbled upon a particularly dangerous weapon.
And that made it hard because it was hard to see what they were doing. They would flip around and stab them, but like.
It didn't appear that they were holding anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the one thing. I was like, why couldn't they just give them something more solid, like blue flame or something?
Where they achieve the same effect, but make it just the image sharper.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say that I really enjoyed, rather was relieved by, was that the end did not feature a knockdown dragout.
Yeah.
It didn't, like, there was...
Yeah,
there was
that time thing was really interesting.
It was like, look, I'm going to, you know, just piss you off until...
Because he's so smart.
And he keeps killing him, And the big... godlike thing is like, because like I didn't want to see, like, that to me is about as goofy as this movie gets. Like even in the Guardians of the Galaxy, when they're basically talking to a god, that, you know, big purple guy that sits in a chair on an asteroid somewhere in the middle of nowhere, like it's still a physical entity. It seems to have a form to it that can be killed. You know, it doesn't look, you know, would take something pretty big, but this is just a floating head in the middle of nowhere, much like at the end of Star Trek V. You know, like, how do you...
I think a Green Lantern with that blob.
Yeah.
And he, like, punches it with his power ring, and it goes into the sun. I'm like, oh, that was really terrible.
Why were we stunk? But, like, there wasn't a fight about that. It was a negotiation, and it was, you know, based on, like, I've trapped this thing in a loop. We're going to be here forever.
In a loop that it didn't understand. Which was good because it lived forever.
Yeah, it didn't understand time.
Yeah.
So it basically, he introduced it to the concept of discontinuity.
Yeah.
And it totally fucked with it.
Like, yeah, and it was like, what is this? Why does this keep happening?
Again.
And I was like, oh, man.
Clever, really clever. That's the word we keep talking about. So.
Kids love it.
Yeah, I mean, that's something they can kind of understand.
Yeah, you know? there were kids in the theater and... And I'm happy for them that they have this sort of thing. Like when they saw Thor come in that mid-credit sequence, they were so excited. Yeah. It's Thor! I was like, oh.
And they all knew to stay too. That was
like they expect it.
What I liked about this movie also was, in terms of the kids, is that like none of it was like inappropriate or bizarre or confusing.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I was thinking of Batman versus Superman a lot during the film because they kept saying, "We're not doing what Marvel's doing. Marvel just panders to everyone to." Kids of all ages, blah blah blah. We're gonna make it dark and gritty, and it was horrible. Kids were crying, literally crying and screaming in the theater.
Yeah.
This one, in the beginning, he's doing surgeries, and you show him with his hands with the pins coming out of them and everything. They don't, and they say shit every so often, and they show him in love with Rachel McAdams.
Asshole was thrown around.
Yeah,
the language was,
but to a point, like there's a way to pull it back. I mean, you don't see that open brain.
Right, yeah, you don't need to see that.
Well, that's what I mean. You don't need to see certain things. The kids can figure it out on their own. They can fill in those things with their own imagination. Their imagination's better than mine. They're little kids.
Exactly. And usually, anyone's imagination tends to be better than whatever you could show me anyway. And what happens if you show me the thing flat out is I look away.
Yeah, it's like, oh.
You don't want your audience to look away at any point during your movie. That would be negative.
Yeah, it's a visual thing. I need to see it.
Yeah.
So when they say that they pander and all that stuff, I don't think they do. I think they're just better at handling things that aren't appropriate for certain ages.
Well, you can't make a gritty superhero movie for adults. I mean, you can't. Or rather, I should say, nobody has yet. Because even if they tried, it's still Batman and Superman. Kids are still going to go see that. They still want them there.
I think the only one they did.
They're lying when they say that they don't want them there.
So, and here's the other thing. Like, so Deadpool.
I was just thinking.
Is definitely not for kids.
But it's not a gritty movie, is it?
It's, well, not gritty. It's for adults.
It's a gross out fest, but
yeah,
even the grossness is handled humorously. It's a comedy.
Right.
More than anything else.
But, so when I'm in the store and I see toys for Batman and Superman for kids, you know, the helmets and the action figures, I think that's pretty crazy. And they go, well, everybody else does it. Yeah, but there's a kid version on TV.
Yeah.
So, like, when people always say about Ghostbusters, well, Ghostbusters wasn't a kid's movie, and it wasn't.
No.
But there was a real Ghostbusters cartoon, and we were really into that. Marvel has cartoon shows on Netflix you can watch. The Lego versions of stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's...
That's really the kids.
Yeah.
So, like, seeing them on the big screen is, like, a special thing, and then the cartoon is the normal thing. And DC doesn't have that. They just have giant bat demons coming out of the graveyards scaring children.
That's so terrifying. Even I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my God.
Messed up.
You know, where the walls bleed.
Ugh. Oh. I love that. We don't make movies for kids. Oh, really?
Oh, really? Maybe you shouldn't sell it to them.
Then maybe you should you should film it all in French.
In black and white.
If you want to make it less accessible, this is the way to do it. You know, Jesus Christ. Well, this was a nice little love fest. We really come out of a movie, so like that was really well done.
Yeah.
You know,
I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah. It's, bravo to Benedict Cumberbatch, who didn't bother to show up. It's all right.
He's probably tired from doing the Ellen show and all that stuff.
That's true. Well, if you enjoyed Doctor Strange and want to tell us about it, you can do that on Twitter at the number 3 drinks in pod, while Twitter is still around. It's not going to be around for much longer, I don't think.
Twitter, really?
Yeah. Oh, they can't sell it. They're trying to sell Twitter. Nobody wants to buy it. It doesn't make any money. It doesn't do anything.
Oh.
It's basically like a not-for-profit platform.
Hmm.
You can advertise on it, but like we were talking about this, you know, weeks ago. You know, sending out a tweet is like bolting something to the hood of your car and driving through town at 90 miles an hour and saying, "Did you see that thing that I posted?"
Oh, you missed it.
Yeah, no. Whereas Instagram is, I think it's visual. So like an ad on Instagram. I bought a lot of things off of Instagram now.
Hmm.
So I look at it, I go, oh, that's a, yeah, look at that. Look at that. Because you can see it. You're looking for the image, whereas with Twitter, you're looking for a text or looking for information in text. It doesn't work.
Well, catch us there before it's gone, I guess.
Yes. And then, of course, on the Instagram at 3DrinksInPodcast, Facebook, email address, you can find all these things out. But most importantly is the iTunes. You want to go to iTunes, you want to rate us, you want to leave a review. About how great we are. Not a negative review. That would be mean. And all you people who were concerned about my fuh conversation before can go fuh yourself.
Uh-huh.
Get it? I made a joke about the funny way you say that word. It's written as faux, which is really funny when, like, you know, like...
Really funny?
Well, when restaurants get, like, you know, get clever with their, we're going to name our Vietnamese restaurant, you know, faux something. Faux show. Faux show Vietnamese food, something like that.
All right, I chuckled a little.
You see?
I'll give you that.
It's enjoyable.
But I won't eat there.
No. But it's pronounced pho, which is not as interesting to use phonetically. So, anyway.
Can we wrap this up?
Yes.
Okay.
Go do all those things. We'll put out little poll on. I do like the poll thing on Twitter. That's a lot of fun. And let us know what you think.
Yeah, polls here. Get your polls before it closes, apparently.
All right, everybody. As always.
Oh, please drink responsibly.
Indeed. Bye. Adios. Bye.